I'm Aaron Blummer, and I have Pastor Matt Morrell here with us today, the new pastor of Fort Baptist Church. And I want to say, first of all, thanks for giving me the time and taking the time to sit down and be part of this today.
Thank you, Aaron. It's my privilege.
How's it feel to be just a few days into this new ministry role?
Well, it's a daunting responsibility, and I'm overwhelmed with all the things that I need to learn, the people I need to meet. But I'm grateful for God's clear leading in our lives, and I'm stubbornly optimistic for all that God will and can do through us here.
So it's a pretty big change. And you were at Chisago?
I was at Chisago Lakes Baptist Church for 10 years. Was invited by Dr. Ernie Schmidt to come on staff at Chisago Lakes Baptist as his youth pastor, where I served for 4 years. While I earned my MDiv here at Central Seminary. In the spring of 02, as I was graduating, Pastor Schmidt was moving on to Faith Baptist in Ankeny, Iowa, and left me to keep the lights on and the doors open at Chisago Lakes Baptist. And after 10 months of looking for a seasoned, veteran, wiser, old man pastor, the church asked for me to stay. And so it was an honor and a blessing. And so we remained at Chisago Lakes Baptist really through this past spring, totaling 10 years with them, a fruitful ministry, a sweet ministry. We love the people there, and in many ways I cut my teeth on ministry and grew up there.
A lot of us were pretty surprised that Fourth Baptist called a pastor as young as you are.
I turned 32 last Sunday. On my installation day, I turned 32, so I'm young.
Did that surprise you?
Sure. I received the phone call this past fall from the pulpit search committee here at Forth, and they inquired as to my interest. I told them I wasn't interested at the time, that we were fully content and thrilled in where God had placed us. Of course, they asked if we would pray about it, and I agreed to pray, and then we connected again. And we really laid it before the Lord and asked the Lord to make things clear. In conversations with the pulpit committee and the deacons in the church, we did, of course, address the elephant in the room, and that being my youth and my level of education. I recognize that my predecessors have been living legends and giants in ministry, and we're grateful for those men, Dr. Clearwaters, Dr. Ernest Pickering, Dr. Doug McLaughlin. But one thing that resonated with me is the pulpit committee and the deacons said that, they said, we're simply looking for a pastor, to shepherd our people. And that resonated with me. Because whether you're 32 or 62, I believe God has called me to shepherd people. And I can do that. I'm mindful of Paul's admonition to Timothy, of course, to not let anyone despise my youth, but to be an example. And so my desire is to simply model for the believers here, in word and deed and in conduct and all those matters, what a believer ought to be. And I think many times more is caught than even taught. And sometimes my life can speak louder than my messages. So it's a great honor. It's humbling. And but God has led us here, so we're going to move forward.
Has your age, have you felt any special challenges in connection with that yet?
Well, 6 years ago, when I became the pastor at Chisago Lakes Baptist, it was a similar dynamic. I was 26 at the time, and I became the senior pastor there following the footsteps of Ernie Schmidt. And, for instance, all of our deacons were old enough to be my father. And so for a second time now in my life, I find myself stepping into a role where I am leading those that are older than me. And I think the way that can work is if I maintain a humble spirit and recognize the gray hairs and the wisdom and the aging, the experience that is around me, and then if there is that mutual respect. And there's safety in a multitude of counselors, and I love the notion of sitting down with those that are older and wiser than me and deferring to them sometimes in their counsel and seeking their wisdom. And only by pride comes contention. And whether I'm young and proud or whether I'm old and proud, conflict can occur. And so very careful to respect and honor those that I get to work with. I am privileged to work with men that are greater than I am. And I'm blessed to work in the seminary wing with a Dr. Kevin Bowder. And I'm blessed to have a pastoral staff here that have been around the blocks a few times, and I'm grateful for that. I acknowledge that I am perhaps a first among equals among the pastoral staff and some of the men here, but I think that can be a blessing. I'll tell you, speaking again to that, where does a young man like myself find the courage or the boldness to lead? And I would say that we derive our authority from the scriptures. And so when I step into the pulpit and I am declaring, "Thus says the Lord," I can do so with the same authority as one 20 years my senior. And so really our authority is derived from the scriptures, and I think I find courage there in that. Although my audience might be those with greater academic degrees or with more experience, I can boldly say, "Thus says the Lord." I also think that I find the courage to pastor here because of the conviction that God has led us here. And whether it's Moses who complained and lamented, "Lord, I can't speak, I'm unable, this is too much for me," or whether it's Gideon, "I'm not a mighty man of valor," some of these ultimately, when they were able to gain the assurance and the conviction that God was with them and God was leading them, then they were able to move forward and obey and follow. And that's where I find myself.
Would it be fair to say that you see a distinction between preaching authority and decision-making authority?
Well, there is a distinction, I suppose. And when it comes to practical matters, where do I find the authority? Some of it is inerrant in the position of the pastor. When particular decisions need to be made, of which yet few have been, since I've been on the ground here just a couple weeks, I would like to see consensus built with the pastoral staff, with the deacons, and with the church. In the event that I have to pull rank or ramrod an issue or a decision, I hope that I would have the wisdom and the care and the pause to pull back and rethink that matter. And so I lean heavily on the pastoral staff, and I look to the deacons as a body of counselors, and by God's grace, we can move forward with that consensus and that solidarity. In the occasions in my brief ministry experience that I have acted unilaterally, I have found myself to err. In the events where I have sought the counsel and gained the consensus and have been able to lead with that, then there's been great blessing in the results of those matters. So my dad has often told me, you drive cattle, you lead sheep. And I want to be mindful that I'm not a cattle rancher, I'm a shepherd. And so you proceed carefully and prayerfully, and sheep can be led.
Speaking of your dad,
yes.
Tell me more about him and how you grew up and what's your background.
My father was a pastor for 25 years out east, largely in GRBC circles. He is currently a professor at Pillsbury Baptist Bible College in Owatonna. And he is a model for me in ministry, and I'm grateful for his counsel. And much of my modus operandi is often reflects, I think, his ministry over the years.
Do you think that experience growing up in that setting put you ahead a little bit in terms of preparedness?
Yes. In fact, I'm grateful for the opportunity to grow up in a pastor's home because it was like a lifelong internship. It was a lifetime of being able to observe and witness the affairs of local church ministry, which is really what I think God used to even call me into ministry in the first place. I concluded I'd be happy doing nothing else other than local church ministry.
Was your dad pretty open about the struggles of ministry and including family in that, or how would you characterize what that was like?
Ministry for my dad and my mom was not a job, it was a life. And so our entire family was involved in ministry in every aspect and element and component of it. I am certain that there were many, many things that occurred that I was unaware of. And I think my dad used good discretion in what things he would share or not share with his family. However, we were intimately involved in it all, and I loved it.
Did you go through some things were a little painful, but
sure,
helpful?
Sure. I witnessed some hurts that my parents suffered, experienced some scars myself, I suppose, at times not fully understanding the dynamics of church life and body life. But I think those things pale in comparison to the satisfaction and the joy of being in a ministry family.
You so often see the other end of the spectrum, mm-hmm. where kids who grow up in ministry, mm-hmm. When they become adults, they don't want to have any part of it.
I have friends and peers that have also grown up in ministry homes and have soured to the prospects of being in full-time vocational ministry because of the hurts, the injustices that they have witnessed their parents suffer, because of the wounds that they themselves have experienced. And I want to be careful not to diagnose or the reasons why they have a different perspective. It's not wrong to hurt. We are all hurt at some point or another along the way, but if we harbor that hurt, that can harden us. And I think Satan will use that harbored hurt to harden us and to turn our affections away from local church ministry or missionary work or vocational ministry.
How well do you think your education prepared you for ministry? You went to Northland, you went to Central.
Mm-hmm. I'm forever indebted to both Northland and Central. With a twinkle in my eye, I might say that I got my heart at Northland and I got my head at Central. But together, it's shaped me into the pastor that I am today. But incredibly grateful for Northland, and yet enjoy a great relationship with them and fully support and endorse Dr. Olson and all the folks there. Grateful as well for Central Seminary, and I'm thrilled to be part of the synergy of ministry here with the church and the seminary. It's a blessing to be able to minister to this generation and then walk down the hallway and prepare the next. And I have a burden for that. I have a burden for fundamentalism. I'm grateful Kevin Bowder always reminds me that the idea of fundamentalism is so worth it, although the movement has been dysfunctional in various ways. And he says, if the idea is worth saving, then this is a place where we can then flesh that out. And I want to have a fingerprint on the next generation of aspiring pastors and missionaries and vocational workers here in this place. So I'm grateful for Northland and Central, and they've contributed so much.
Fourth Baptist obviously has had a leadership role in fundamentalism, mm-hmm. From way back with Dr. Clear Waters, getting the seminary started, actively involved in withdrawing from, if I remember right, the conservative Baptists, mm-hmm. at the time. After him, Dr. McLaughlin for a while, mm-hmm. Ernest Pickering for a while, mm-hmm. Doug McLaughlin again.
Sure.
So both the church and its pastors have had a ministry to fundamentalism generally.
Yeah.
To what degree do you see yourself as, and forth in the future, being important in fundamentalism?
At this point, my priority is pastoring the people of Fourth Baptist Church. I don't aspire to be a leader in a movement nationwide. However, I recognize that the nature of this ministry does provide some platform to touch and impact fundamentalism to a larger degree, and I accept that. I think the greatest way as a young fundamentalist that I can impact fundamentalism, preserving the idea of fundamentalism, is to, by God's grace, shepherd a vibrant ministry here. And I want what is taught in the classroom in the seminary wing of the facility to then be fleshed out in the laboratory of Fourth Baptist Church. And Lord willing, we can be a model for my generation of how we might do church, how we might serve the Lord, how we might reach our community, how we might engage our culture without abandoning some of the core values and the important convictions that we do hold dear. I'm very conscious of the movement and the shifting that's taking place among my peers and among young fundamentalists, and I watch, I'm acutely aware, and I troll the blogs, and I listen to the podcasts, and I see the flyers come across my desk for this conference and that conference, and it's all going to shake down in time. Right now, I want to be driven by the priority of pastoring the people here. We'll start with that.
Speaking of fundamentalism and, you know, trolling blogs, looking at the younger generation and so forth, how does the future look to you? Do you see encouraging signs, encouraging trends, or if you could imagine, if Christ doesn't return in the next couple of decades, what do you think it looks like in 20 years?
Well, I think it'll look different. I think that's inevitable. I think there is an evolution taking place, a metamorphosis, culturally in fundamentalism, perhaps even theologically to some degree, issues of separation and whatnot. I think in the end, the pendulum will right itself. The pendulum swings, and I think it's really the story of church history. There's been an overreaction that has been met with the opposite overreaction, which has been met again by a counter overreaction. And I would appeal for balance. And perhaps currently we are personality driven, perhaps we are issue driven, perhaps we are infatuated with the success of one element or component or another of fundamentalism, and we bandwagon to one conference, or we flock to another author. I think it'll right itself. I think it'll shake down and balance. Again, I would appeal to my responsibilities as a local church pastor, and I would hope that the fundamentalism of Fourth Baptist Church 5 or 10 or 20 years from now is one that is zealous for the Word of God and the God of the Word, that is burdened for its community, and is actively and proactively presenting the gospel, seeing people saved and discipled, and then presenting before that next generation the great commission living of leaving this place and impacting the world. And that is not rocket science, and it's nothing new. In fact, it's a bit old-fashioned. In the meantime, there will be issues and trends and fads and ideas that will be tossed around.
What advice would you have for younger pastors just starting out in ministry?
I would encourage young pastors to love God and love people, and be careful not to be distracted by so many things that come across their desk. There are promotional items, there are ads, there are emails, there are opinions, there are ideas, and it can be very distracting. And I found in the last 10 years of ministry that to the degree that I kept the main things the main things, we found ourselves to have a fruitful and satisfying ministry. My mind is buzzing right now with a grocery list of tips and tricks and ideas and solutions, but we might need to save those for another day.
you mentioned that you're involved in the internet a little bit and reading the blogs and so forth, and I think I've seen you comment up there a couple times.
A few.
On one thing or another. What value do you see in that, and what potential do you think it has, positive ending?
I liken the blogosphere to the hallway theology of the freshman in Bible college at times, where everyone weighs in on a particular topic, sometimes to no definitive conclusion, and sometimes without the necessary forethought. I am grateful for the opportunity to engage and to have the conversations that we have online. And I think it can be iron sharpening iron. And I think there's a great opportunity to learn and to understand some of the things that are happening. I do fear that at times it becomes an opportunity for us to speak without thinking. Proverbs warns a fool, it's a fool who utters all his mind. And sometimes, again, as Proverbs explains, a wise man withholds judgment until he hears a matter. So sometimes we jump to conclusions, and sometimes we vent our feelings too prematurely, and in the end we find ourselves in a world of hurt because of that. And so with any tool, with any instrument, the internet and the blogs can be used for great good, or they can cause a world of hurt. And so I would encourage all of us in it just to be very cautious and careful. And I have governed myself in recent years in how much I post, because often my impulsive reactions are regrettable, and after pondering for a day, I have wiser thinking. So,
well, I want to just thank you for your time.
Thank you, Aaron.
I enjoyed very much talking to you, and it's been informative and interesting. Maybe we can talk again sometime a couple years down the road.
I would enjoy that.